This is the Be One Change One podcast, where our mission is to help listeners define values, practice integrity, and inspire change.
Our vision is to mentor men and empower them to achieve more by taking responsibility for shaping their own lives.
He's Cass, an evolving man who has been shaped by adversity and continues to grow through his imperfections.
And he's Roscoe, an imperfect work in progress that tries to suck less every day.
Between us, we have over 40 years of Air Force fighter pilot experience with countless hours as trainers, instructors, and mentors.
Join us and learn to take responsibility for your own life as we dive into subjects from leadership to resilience to vulnerability.
Be the one who changes their course. Be decisive, driven, and purposeful. Set the example for others. Lead. We wish we'd had this show when we were younger men.
Be the one.
So last night, I was on the phone with an old friend of mine. We were ALOs together way back in the day. And
what's an ALO?
Air liaison officer. We were at Fort Campbell breaking things and killing people. And he's inside of his window to be able to start thinking and talking about retirement. So he had reached out to me about 45 days ago or so. Hey man, let's link up. You know, I want to pick your brain on some of the transition stuff. Da da da. Okay, fine. So we finally linked up last night and we're talking for, I don't know, like an hour or so. And I ended up asking him about his wife. How does his wife feel about the transition into retirement and walking away from active duty and all that? Because she married into it. She had no affiliation with the military. She kind of married into it when he had been in already about 7 or 8 years or so. Anyways, he says, well, yeah, she just finished up her, and he stopped and he goes, oh, she's doing the same thing that Cass's wife is doing. She's a licensed clinical social worker. And like my eyebrow kind of went up a little bit. Okay. Well, later on in the conversation, he made another comment about, well, you know, it's kind of like what Cass said the other day about da 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 da. And I was like, wait a minute, are you actually watching this garbage that we're putting out? And he says, oh yeah, man, I watched every episode and everything. And I thought it was so cool that you guys brought Alicia on and all that. And so I was like, all right, well, cool, man. If you've listened to, I mean, he's a good friend and I know he's going to give me honest feedback. He's a bone wizzo. And okay. I know he's going to give me honest feedback. He's used to the process. So I said, dude, give me feedback, man. Help us make it better. You know, what do we suck at? What can we get better at and all that? And he says, honestly, man, I really feel like you guys are doing great and you're putting out good content and you have really good conversations. But the thing that's missing is you haven't talked about finances and investing and how to budget and do your week to week or your month to month stuff. And so I had to tell that story because it was fresh on my mind. A, it's super cool that a bro is supporting us, and B, it leads right into our topic for the day. And we both got a chuckle out of when I told him that, well, we've already actually got it planned and we got notes and everything. So
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's cool. And that's what we're going to talk about today. One. So we've gotten some questions around this. And so we're going to do an episode just on finances. And I don't, you know, we're kind of a little loose about what we're going to cover today. We may get into specific budgeting. We may not. We may just get into broader financial topics. But if there's anything in particular that you guys want us to kind of dive into or that you're interested in, just shoot us an email or respond to us on socials. And we'll set that up for sure in the next episode.
Yeah, it is kind of a broad subject. I mean,
it is. Well, there's a lot to it, right?
Seriously, you could pick any one of these, you know, items that we have on our little note sheet here and probably do an entire episode on it. I mean, everything from budgeting. I mean, we could talk for an hour on how to do a budget, like for you guys. So that's one of those things. I think budgeting is something that's very personal and it's very individual. And especially as a couple, I think it's a must. You have to do it. Because you need to see where your money's going in order to be disciplined and being able to trim the fat. Yeah. Because those little $8 Netflix subscriptions, they start to add up. So what are some of your techniques that you and Alicia use? Do y'all use a template? Did you come up with something on your own? I mean,
yeah, dude, we have a budget spreadsheet and we, you know, all of our standard things that we pay for every month are on that budget spreadsheet. But then we also budget for, like, you know, entertainment and gas and, you know, savings and investment and all that other stuff. And so it's a little lengthy just because we're older. And so we have probably a few more bills than other people do, you know, but we budget all that out. We bend money for medical and for clothing. And, you know, we put a certain amount of money in every month into all these different bins so that we always have money that's set aside when it's time to go shopping for the kids, or we need to get something for each other, or you know, I need a new shirt or new shoes to work out in or whatever the case may be, so that we're not using the credit card to buy it. We've actually got money in savings, you know, that's set aside for it. So yeah, we get really detailed and anal about it. The other thing I would point out too is if you are in a relationship or married, like, finances is one of the biggest things that leads to, like,
go back to my
marriage.
Big three. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so if you do have a partner, it's important for you guys to sit down and actually go through that process and get some agreement around that stuff. And, you know, kind of have a shared mental model about what you're going to do and what your goals are, and so that you guys can both be disciplined in that process.
Yeah, I think we've documented it at least on one episode, probably more than that. But money and the lack of management of that money, managing it together, I think is probably one of the main sources of conflict in a relationship. Yeah. So go back to my three keys to a successful marriage or a successful relationship. It was money, communication, and sex or intimacy. And for this exact reason, I mean, you don't want something as, because it's really not that hard to manage this stuff. It's, I mean, you can break it down as simply or as complex as you want to. Like, it sounds like you guys get pretty detailed and you kind of pre-sort your funds a little bit. Katie and I don't go that level, but we have an Excel spreadsheet that I made myself. I didn't use one of the templates, but it does the same thing. It does all the math for me. I just plug in the bills, and we do it on a 90-day basis so that we can see the changes. And we'll highlight things in different colors if we, you know, for example, our groceries or our gas bills, things like that. If we notice an increase or a decrease, then we'll compensate, you know, either way for that. And the idea, we started doing this when we were very young as a couple. Now, you have to realize too that Katie and I got together when we were 20 and we had no money. Yeah. Like, I was so broke. I had to fart in my pocket to have a cent. It was bad. So we learned to live paycheck to paycheck. And I think we still carry that mentality today of living paycheck to paycheck, and everything, all the surplus income, if there is any, then that goes into another bucket somewhere else.
Yeah. We're pretty specific about how we kind of bin all of our stuff, but that's just us. Right. And again, it's kind of like the values exercise. It's whatever works for you, as long as you're actually working within your budget.
That's what I said. It's very personal.
Yeah, because I think that's where most people get themselves in trouble is, you know, let's be honest, we're a debtor society, right?
Yeah.
We're a credit society, you know, we're a consumer society. We spend a lot of money on consumer goods, and a lot of people carry a lot of credit card debt or, you know, debt on auto loans or whatever the case may be. And that's the kind of stuff that we try to avoid.
Yeah, I wish that I would have, now looking back on it, I wish that I would have done a little bit more research on, like, when all this started in our American history, when the Fed was created, when interest, you know, being able to take out loans, being able to exchange currency versus bartering and you know, the gold-based economy and all those kinds of things, you know, that it's all added up to kind of where we are now. And I wanted to, before we get too far into it, I did want to throw this out there where I just pulled a couple of stats off of. This comes from Fox News as recent as October of this year. So just about a month ago or so. It says credit card debt surpassed $1 trillion in the second quarter of this year. And that surge represented an increase of $45 billion and is the largest increase of all debt types. So what does that tell me? It tells me that when you combine the last few years that we've had in our society of, you know, you had the pandemic and then you had the rollout of that with all the handouts, and you had an exchange or a handover of the different political regimes and the different mentalities behind that, and it's driven up some inflation. Well, people didn't curb their spending habits very good during that, and I don't think that they were actively managing some things, and that's where we're resulting in some of this credit card stuff. Dude, I'm not a scientist on this. Or, I'm not an expert on this, but.
Well, and dude, we both lived paycheck to paycheck. I mean, when you're a second lieutenant in the Air Force, you're not making a lot of money, you know? And so.
I was an airman basically.
Right. And so those paychecks can be tight. And I think what you're seeing, especially with inflation, is when the cost of just standard goods, and, you know, we all know what the fuel costs have been the last 6 to 12 months. you know, if your budget was already tied to begin with and you didn't have an opportunity or didn't take advantage of years previous to build yourself a little bit of an emergency fund, then guess what happens, man? I mean, you still got to go to work. You got to put gas in the car. You got to put food on the table, and people end up throwing credit cards down for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because they don't have anything in savings to kind of cover any, you know, increases in costs or over expenditures. And next thing you know, you're $8,000, $10,000, $15,000 in debt coming out of it. So,
well, I think, you know, one of the big takeaways that I would probably lay over this whole thing is nothing is free. There's no such thing as free lunch. So where people thought that they were getting a lot of free handouts at one point in the recent years, that stuff all is going to come back to bite you. And, you know, I'm an outdoorsy guy, right? So I have a lot of outdoor toys and I like to go out and play, and I've got a camper and I've got some other stuff. What I saw was there were a lot of people that during the pandemic and during those, maybe that year or so when we were all kind of stuck at home twiddling our thumbs, a lot of people bought things that they probably had no business buying because money was cheap back then. You know, interest rates were low and they would finance just about anybody. And so now you got guys who are going out and buying $50,000, $60,000 campers who realized in the last couple of years that they don't like camping. And now they're either stuck with the debt or because the market's just not really there for it. The guys who like to go camping still like to go camping, and the guys who don't. And so I think a lot of people made some potentially some bad decisions back in those days.
Well, sure. And the fact of the matter is money isn't cheap. And, you know, if you feel like you have to drive a $25,000 or $30,000 car and pay $500 a month in a car payment when you could purchase a car for $5,000 or $7,000, that would may not, you know, maybe it doesn't stroke your ego or make you look as good driving to work and driving home, but you're not making a $500 car payment a month. That's a huge difference in what you can do with your budget and what your financial future will look like. So,
okay. So story time with Roscoe again. This summer, we're out to eat with Nikki and a couple of his friends, and one of the friends, and I've known these kids since they were pups, right? I've known them for a long, long time. And one of the kids is itching to get rid of his car. It's kind of a POS. And I kind of jokingly said, "Hey man, I'll buy your car." He tried to give it away to a kid for $300, and the kid paid him, I think, $200. They went on a Black Ops mission and repoed it. And so he's got this car sitting there, and so he'd already gotten his $200. He said, "I tell you what, I'll give you the car for $100 because I just wanted to go four wheeling in the stupid car, see how far I could make it in the desert, shoot it, and walk away, right? Just having some fun." So fast forward a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and we're at my house having Nikki's 21st birthday party. This kid shows up. I'm on the back porch. This kid shows up and hands me a set of keys and says, "Here's your car keys." "What? My car?" He says, "Yeah, your $100 car. Here you go." So what are you talking about? "Did you drive it here?" He goes, "Oh yeah, it totally runs." "You got to be kidding me. Katie, pay the man." So Katie pays the guy his $100, and a couple of weeks go by, and I pull it into the driveway and I start doing kind of a top-down inspection on it, and it's running a little bit rough. It's got a check engine light. I clear all the codes on it, check the dipstick, and there's zero oil in this car. So I added 3.5 quarts of oil to it. Now it runs. It just purrs like a kitten. It's got some cosmetic stuff wrong with it. But dude, I've been driving that car to work this week, getting 30 miles to the gallon, and I paid $100 for it.
Yeah.
$100 car. It's nothing fancy. A buddy of mine here that lives in my neighborhood was coming over to admire my $100 purchase. And I was going over kind of all the dings and dents and the things that were wrong with it. And I think I can get it fixed up for about, I don't know, $100 in parts or so. And one of the things that was wrong with it was the radio, the volume button didn't work on the radio. So he says, "Dude, I got a brand new Kenwood deck in my garage. I'll give it to you. I've had it for years. It's not doing me any good." So I came home from work that day to find a brand new, still in the box, Kenwood, removable, detachable face, Bluetooth, the whole nine. So I replaced that this weekend, and the blinker switch, and it was a day VFR driver only. It was only good for day, fair weather type stuff because I couldn't control the headlights. The switch was broken. And the windshield wipers didn't work. So I bought both of those switches off of Amazon for about $15 a piece and replaced them this weekend, replaced the radio controller. So now I got a night IMC drivable car that I'm getting 30 miles to the gallon compared to 16 in my truck for $100. Yeah. If I drive that thing to work, yeah. If I drive that thing to work for a month, I'm breaking even and I'm making money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, man. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, if I'm honest with the ones out there, like, dude, I was not that smart with money when I was in my 20s. You know, it wasn't really until probably my mid to later 30s that I really started to get smart with finances. I mean, we budgeted and stuff like that. But when I was younger with kids and stuff like that, like, you know, do we have money to go out and eat? No. Okay, well, let's just go out and eat because I don't feel like making dinner. Let's put it on the credit card, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the next thing you know is you got a couple thousand dollars in credit card debt and you're like, fuck, how am I going to pay this off? You know, and rates on credit cards aren't that great ever. And so, you know, if you can build discipline now, so the thing that I would say is like debt is the biggest thief for your financial future. Right.
Yeah.
So, and we have a debtor mentality in this country. We have a consumer mentality. Credit cards are easy. You know, it's really easy to go out and buy something you really want, even when you don't have the money for it. It's really easy to run out to the car dealership and finance something that you want.
Yep.
Even though you can't afford it. Right. And they don't care. They don't care if you can't make the payments. They don't care if your income matches the ratio of what you need in order to make, you know, to buy that thing. They don't care, man. They're going to sell it to you. And then if you can't make your payments, they're just going to repo it and sell it back to somebody else for the same thing. So,
well, because they're in it for the dollars.
This is what we're talking about.
Well, you know, I heard something a while back, and this kind of goes into all things B1 Change One, where we talk a lot about mindset, right? Everything's based on your mindset and the way that you think about things. And you kind of have to be active with your thoughts around this. Here's an example. So if you go out and you're going to buy, let's say you're going to buy a car stereo or a home stereo, right? Or a TV. This is a good one, a TV. And you go to the TV store, whichever one you select, and they've got this one on sale for $1,000, right? It's a big TV. It's beautiful, 4K, high def, everything, all the hookups. And it's on sale for $1,000. And you're going to save $200 or $300 on it. And so you buy it. And you go home and you're bragging to all your buddies about how you saved $200 or $300 on this big ass TV. The other way to think about that, instead of thinking about, well, I saved $200, the other way to think about it, which I think is going to lead us into some of these good topics here, is you just spent $1,000 on a TV.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between those two mindsets, right? You just spent $1,000. Instead of saying, well, I saved $200, think of it in terms of I just spent $1,000 on a TV. I could have probably got one for half of that somewhere else, you know? So the mindset behind a lot of this stuff, I broke this down, man. I read this pretty decent book a while back. It's called Work Hard, Don't Suck. And there were three things in there that really stood out to me. One is you have to know the value of a dollar. The second one is you have to actively manage your money. And the third one is you have to practice a little bit of financial discipline. And we can discuss all around those. But I think when you break all this down, those three areas or those three buckets can kind of sum up what the next, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes of discussion is probably going to sound like.
Yeah, well, you know, again, we're a consumer society. And I think what happens a lot of the times is people get up with, I have to have designer clothes, or maybe your girlfriend or your wife is like, I have to have a designer bag, or, you know, I need a 200 pair of Oakleys instead of a $15 pair of sunglasses from Walmart that look the same and nobody's really going to know except it doesn't have the reflective bow on the side, right? And so, you know what? And here's the deal, dude, is if you're smart with your money, you'll get to the place where you can actually afford to buy those things.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's true.
The higher end stuff that you like, and you can, you know, you can take advantage of those types of things, but
yeah,
you have to figure out how to live within your budget. Right. And I think we're really bad about that. In the state, and like you were talking to, you know, think about all the subscriptions that you have. I mean, if you're 20 years old making $15 an hour and you have Netflix and Apple TV and HBO Max and Disney Plus, and like, dude, narrow it down. Like,
those
what
things
do you really
add up,
need,
man?
You know, because they add up fast and you don't even realize it because you're like, oh, it's $19 a month. I can do that, right? Well, yeah. Well, when $19 a month is multiplied by 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, now it's $150 a month, and that's a big difference. So,
well, I think what you're talking about,
and that's And well, I was just going to say, and that's where budgeting is so important, because yeah. if you actually sit down, build an Excel spreadsheet, and write down all of the money that you have going out every month for everything that you have, you know, mm-hmm. rent or your mortgage, insurance, you know, water, gas, trash, if you pay for trash, you know, electric, fuel, car payment, car insurance, you know, entertainment, cell phone bill, Netflix, whatever all those other things yeah. are, you put all that stuff together and you add it up, and you may realize real fast that when you look at your net income to what you're putting out a month, it may not be where you want to be.
Yeah, I think it's really eye-opening when you put it down on paper. And I tell everybody, man, when you're starting an exercise like this, do the math. The numbers won't lie to you.
Yeah.
If you're honest with it and you know, go back, do a 90-day look back into your bank account and account for every cent for the last 90 days and put them into bins of entertainment, eating out, all those things that you just discussed. And you'll be shocked. Like Katie and I still do it. We go and we sit down every couple of months and we'll go through tip to tail everything that we're spending. And we're like, whoa, wow, that one really snuck up on us, you know? And there's a lot of people know about Dave Ramsey, right? Dave Ramsey is kind of the, I don't know, yeah. the guru in the financial live debt free kind of realm there. Well, one of his methods is the envelope method, where you take your check, you take your paycheck and you cash it, and you put those dollar bills into different envelopes. And one of those envelopes may be rent. One of those envelopes may be food. One may be childcare or car payment,
entertainment,
Yeah. If that's where you want to go with it, you know, but you divvy up your paycheck. If you get paid $1,000, you go and you divvy that up where the weight or the economy of effort needs to be. So if your rent is expensive, you put more money into that envelope. And so my oldest son, Tyler, has been doing this now for a couple of months. And he called me up not too long ago and he's like, "Dad, dude, like I'm having like, I was not prepared for the reaction that I'm having when I have to yeah. hand over cash to someone." I said, "Yeah, well, you know, we've gotten so accustomed to just plugging a card in, punching in some numbers and you walk away with your soda or whatever. But when you yeah. have to hand somebody a Benjamin for your rent or whatever it is, sure. it's, you have a visceral reaction to that. Like it stings a little, yeah. you know?"
Or if you go through and you do a budget for the first time, and you're like, "Okay, we're going to set $300 aside for entertainment." Entertainment's like, you know, eating out, going to the movies, whatever. Yeah. And then a week and a half into the month, you're out of money.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, dude? You just highlighted one of the issues that you have, right?
That's right.
Because you're not tracking that stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's a great technique, especially for those, I don't know, if, you know, for rent and stuff like that. I mean, it's easy to do, you know, auto pay and things like that, for insurance and things like that. But definitely for those other subsidiary things yeah. like entertainment and things like fuel, things like that, I think it can be a really valuable exercise.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I would add is typically most financial advisors, Dave Ramsey types or whatever, you should only, so take your net income and you should only be spending about 25% of what you make a month on rent or your mortgage. If you're spending more than that, then your budget or what you're doing is probably out of whack.
You might be living outside of your means a little bit.
Yeah, you're probably living yeah. outside of your means at that point.
And you know what, man, it's okay to have dreams, all right? And it's okay to live big if you're disciplined about it. And maybe you don't have a car payment. And you know, your car's been paid off for a year or two, and you can afford that money that you once used to pay for your car payment. You've allocated that towards something else. Maybe you wanted to upscale your living conditions or whatever. And I say that as long as you're maneuvering inside of your budget, this is why maybe I don't get as granular as you guys do
yeah.
in our budgeting. I'm not saying we keep it wave tops. We do get detailed, but we're okay playing the shell game with some dollar signs back and forth to different buckets, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, you can move money around if you need to, but that's only if you have buckets that you have money in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you know, that's valid. Yeah, you have to have the funds. Yeah.
So my point is, if you're in your 20s and, you know, you're making a living wage, but you're not making a lot of money, it's going to be important for you to be very specific mm-hmm. about what you spend and what how you spend and what you spend it on. And
yeah,
coming up with some of those percentages can help you kind of stay in the ballpark to make that money go as far as you can. You know, especially if you want to start saving, right? Because like one of the things that I saw the other day was if you're 25 and you put $100 into, like, let's just say an ETF a month until you're 65, at a standard return on the stock market, let's say 6 to 8%, you're going to have about $1.2 million when you hit 65.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so compounding interest, which we haven't talked about yet, but is compounding interest is huge, right? When you're younger and you've got a long time frame to retirement,
yeah,
the more money that you can put away when you're younger, the more that money grows with compounding interest over time, and the more of a nest egg that you'll have when you get to your retirement age. And I think most people, I would say the vast majority of people are not good about that at all. I know I was not good about that in my 20s. And so, and I wish I would have been, because I could probably retire earlier than I'm going to now.
Yeah,
but
right.
Yeah, like,
but those are lessons.
Not like I want to be in New Orleans tonight, you know?
Yeah.
So,
you know, something I was really pleasantly surprised with is, you know, when I joined the Air Force, I joined the Air Force in 97 as an airman basic. And there was no class that we went to about financial planning or any of that kind of stuff. All right. It was, here's your paycheck on the 1st and the 15th, which for an airman basic isn't a lot. But Colin just graduated basic training back in October, and he called me up after he got to his tech school up in Wichita Falls. He called me up and he goes, "Hey man, I want to talk to you about IRAs and 401ks." Awesome, dude. He's 18 years old. You know, so yeah, we went through the whole thing and I explained to him the difference between Roths and traditionals and why it's important to start now, even with just a little bit. And my thing to him is, and this would be my kind of my blanket statement, my PSA to all the young guys out there or gals that may be listening, is it's never too late to start, but you have to start, right? And it's more important, I think, when you're young, like Colin, 18 years old, it's more important to start something like that and build the habit. It's not so much about the amount of money you save right now. It's building the habit to save so that when you get into your late 20s and your 30s and your 40s, your prime earning years, you've already got that habit there. And now you can really start throwing some money into these, you know, coffee cans in the backyard, if you will.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned before, right? It's all about discipline, right? And if you can start to be disciplined now, then that is going to pay off for you down the road. And what you'll find is, you know, the folks that aren't disciplined in their 20s maybe catch up a little bit in their 30s and then can start to do more in their 40s. If you're disciplined in your 20s, you're already going to be ahead of the power curve. And now in your 30s, you're already setting money aside. In the 40s, dude, you're living the good life.
That's true.
You know?
Yep.
So there's definitely a certain amount of discipline it takes, because you know what? Guess what? Yeah, man, it sucks to come home after working all day long and, you know, maybe your girlfriend or your wife is tired or you got kids and nobody wants to make dinner. And it's easy to go, well, let's go out and spend 50, 60, 70 bucks and have dinner because none of us want to deal with it.
I don't know.
But you don't have
Chinese
50, 60,
buffet
70 bucks
you can't
to spend,
eat anywhere
you know?
For 50 bucks anymore.
Well, yeah. Sorry. That shows you how much I eat out. So, yeah. The other thing that I really liked about Dave Ramsey's thing, too, is his debt snowball. So, if you are in debt, guys, you've got to get out of debt. And the way to do that is the first thing you want to do is try to, one, budget so that you can get a handle on your finances, and then whittle it down to what you really need. So cancel the subscriptions, you know, figure out what it really is. And it may take you a month or two to do that, right? Because you may have to ballpark at first, hey, I think I spend $200 a month on gas. And then you realize, oh, I only spend $150. Or you realize, oh, shit, I spend $300 a month on gas because I have to drive 30 minutes to work or whatever. But figure out what all those things are. And then the first thing you want to do is you want to save about $1,000 into an emergency fund, right? So that if you have a pop-up expense, dishwasher craps the bed, washing machine craps the bed, you know, something goes wrong with a car, you got to get it fixed, you're not having to put it on a credit card. You can cover it with the money you have in the bank.
That's
without
right.
having to go into additional debt. And then once that happens, whatever debt you have, whatever has the smallest amount to pay off, start paying that put all the extra money you have to paying that off first.
That's right.
And then snowball that into whatever's next. Yep. And eventually get to where you're debt-free. You're out of debt. Debt-free, by his definition, is basically anything but your house, right? So if you have a house, if you have a mortgage payment, we're not talking about paying off the house. But we don't want to have car payments. We don't want to have any kind of credit card payments. None of that stuff. So that's one way that you can work towards it in order to get yourself out of debt. Because getting yourself out of debt is the first step, right? Because all the interest that you're paying on anything that you have, I mean, dude, you're losing money. Yep. You know, you think you're just putting $50 on a credit card to go out and, you know, have lunch or whatever, but really you're putting $50 on a credit card that's going to earn 12% interest next month.
Yep.
And that cost is inflated, right? And
that so 50 becomes 75 really quick.
Yeah, dude, you have to get yourself out of debt. That's the first step.
Well, you know, and that comes back to a little bit of the, you know, what I was talking about, kind of my three main points was the first one is you have to know the value of a dollar. And if you're the kind of dude that, you know, doesn't blink an eye at buying a soda on a credit card in the Quick Trip or the Circle K, you need to think about how much that $2 soda is going to end up costing you in the long run. And knowing the value of a dollar, and a dollar, you know, in today's economy, man, a dollar doesn't sound like much, but I'm telling you, they add up pretty darn quick, man. And when you're talking about this interest and, you know, you buy a, if you're the kind of dude that pays $5 or $6 for a cup of coffee every day, then I'd like to sit down with you and talk to you about some better ways that you could probably do that. Like you can buy a coffee machine at Walmart for probably less than $20 and cook your own coffee, man. Like I drink good coffee at my house. And if I were going to a coffee shop every morning to buy that, it would be quadruple the price of what I'm paying.
Yeah. And you know what, dude, if you need to make top ramen every night or eat SpaghettiOs for 2-3 months to get yourself out of debt, then fucking do it. Like one, guess what? You're the dumbass that put yourself there. So figure it out. And two, you got to get out of it. Because if you don't, it's just going to build. I mean, well, that's how they build the structure, man. Like, it's not supposed to be fair. Like, the banks want to make money. So they give you a credit card because they know they're going to fucking make money off of you.
They don't
right?
give a shit about you. They're and making so dollars, now, man.
Now, that said, like now with Alicia and I, like, we use our credit card for everything. We use it for fuel. We use it for food. We use it for, you know, Amazon purchases, all that kind of stuff, right? But we have all this money budgeted aside so that, you know, every 2-3 days we go online and we go through our Chase card and we go, okay, well, that's food, that's entertainment, that's fuel, you know, that's whatever. And then we go and we pay it every 2 or 3 days. And so, well, we never carry a balance.
That's my main point. Number three of practicing financial discipline is you guys know exactly where your money's going and you're working the system, and that's great because you have the discipline to do it. But yeah, I wanted to circle back to your ramen comment. And, you know, kind of working in this same construct of these main points was knowing the value of a dollar and budgeting and all that good stuff. Katie and I learned very early on in our marriage, we learned to live paycheck to paycheck. And that doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. The mentality that we took to it was we budgeted for all of our needs first, and that came out of the paychecks, and any surplus went to the wants in our life. So we had a very clear definition of needs versus wants. And I think we practiced a fair amount of discipline around those. But there were some times when, you know, things would get tight, maybe around Christmas time, or maybe she wanted to fly from Alaska back to Alabama to visit family, and we had to, you know, we had to reach out and grab some more money or whatever. And we would use we still use it to this day. We say, hey, we need to live poor for a little bit. And that meant to us, that meant that we're eating ramen because we had to, not because we wanted to. So all you kids out there that are eating ramen because you think it's awesome to just go microwave some ramen, dude, I've been on a budget where I had to eat ramen because that's all I could afford.
Yeah. Sorry, but sometimes that's just what you have to do, right? To make those payments and not to go into the debt. And so debt's the key. I think if you can get yourself out of debt, and again, do that by one, setting up a savings account and having a small emergency fund so that you can cover any, and let me be clear about the emergency fund. The emergency fund isn't I don't want to make dinner tonight. We're going to go out.
Yeah. Or I need
the emergency fund is, you know, right. The emergency fund is the washing machine broke and I got to call somebody out to fix it. You know, it's, I got to get, oh crap, I got to get tires for the car and we're not in a place yet where we started setting money setting money aside for car expenses. So I'll pay for it out of that, right? So that's what an emergency fund is for. So be disciplined in that, right? And then start getting yourself out of debt. You got to get yourself out of debt if you want to get ahead. When you clear that debt and you don't have those additional payments, I mean, because when you guys go through your budget process and you look at maybe what some of the debt you have, that's probably, you know, $100 to $300 a month that's going out just in credit card payments to pay things off, you know? And so when all of a sudden that's gone and you have $300 back in your budget, you can do a lot with that $300.
That's not an insignificant amount. And you know, to that point, I think that, you know, I mentioned earlier that this budgeting and the process and how you spend your money is very personal and it's very intimate to the individual or to the relationship, to the marriage, whatever it is. But, you know, one couple may not see $100 as being that big of a deal. Like, you know, if you want to go out to eat and drop $100 on some sushi, maybe one couple doesn't see that as a big thing. Like, we wanted to have fun. We wanted some sushi. So we went and dropped a Benjamin on some sushi. Whereas the couple down the street, that may be the difference in them leaving the lights on that month. So, you know, for the guys out there, for the people out there listening, just realize that this is very, it's very intimate to the individual. So whatever works for you, I think that we're talking in broad enough terms with the kind of the mindsets behind it, you know, of the idea of knowing where your money's going and the discipline behind it and where you spend. And, you know, one thing that we haven't really hit on yet, and I see this in a lot of the younger generations nowadays, is when you graduate high school and you've been working at Dairy Queen or Burger King for the last couple of years, guys, you don't deserve a brand new $80,000 pickup truck.
Yeah.
Not only do you not deserve it, you really haven't done anything to earn it, but so you don't deserve it, but you don't need it, right? When Katie and I moved to Alaska, I traded in a Pontiac Grand Am and a Chevy S10 to buy her a four-wheel drive Tahoe as our family car. We're going to Alaska. We needed something that could hold all the kids and get her safely. And this thing, it was a 95 Tahoe. And it was built like a tank. And I felt like she was pretty safe. If she skids through an intersection in downtown Anchorage, I felt like she was going to be safe, right? Well, when we get to Anchorage, you know, I'm a young senior airman going on staff sergeant. I don't have any money. Katie's making, you know, $13, $14 an hour at a hospital as a registered nurse back in those days, not making hardly anything. So when we get to Anchorage, I paid cash, $2,000 cash for a beat up, crappy single cab S10. I'm 6'3", so a single cab S10 was not the most comfortable. Sometimes I felt like Grape Ape in this thing. It was a stick shift, so not an automatic fancy transmission. The radio worked, but the heater did not work in this truck. Now think about where that story was going here. All right. I'm in Alaska for five winters driving a truck that I don't fit in that has no heater. Right. But you know what it did? It got me to work and back. And I can tell you that there were a lot of nights where I drove like Ace Ventura with my head out the window because the windshield was iced over and I got no heater to defrost it. But that truck got me safely to work and back for five winters. And I sold it before I left for $2,000 to another young airman. And I assume he did the same damn thing.
Yeah, man. I remember leaving pilot training and I bought a Honda. I think it was an Accord with like 190,000 miles on it for like $1,000 because we needed another car when we got to Phoenix, and didn't have air conditioning. I'm showing up to Luke in June.
Yep.
Yeah.
We had that thing packed up.
Yeah, we had that thing packed up driving to Phoenix, and we're going up I-40 into Flagstaff. I didn't even know if it was going to make it up the fucking hill, man. It was struggling because it was so goddamn hot out, you know?
Yeah.
But even in my 30s, when we were stationed in Oahu for 2 years and the military shipped one vehicle, but they wouldn't ship two. So I left my truck in Washington and Alicia and I were trying to pay down some student loan debt and some things like that when we were first together. And so for that first couple years in Oahu, we lived pretty, not sparse, but, you know, we were very specific with what we did budgeting-wise. I bought a motorcycle for $1,500 and I rode a motorcycle back and forth to work every day.
Getting 70 miles to the gallon.
Degrees out and sunny.
I can get 80 miles to the gallon on this hog. Yeah.
I had to fill it up once every 3 weeks, you know?
Yeah, man.
And it was awesome too, because I could get in the carpool lane going to work.
Did you drive it to Aspen?
Oahu's horrible.
Did you drive it to Aspen where the women flock like the salmon of Capistrano?
No. Just when I thought you couldn't do anything dumber.
Yeah.
You completely redeem yourself.
Had two pairs of mittens this whole time. So when you and I were in the 425th together, I think we were competing with each other for who had the oldest truck. Remember, all those guys had like brand new cars.
Oh yeah.
And you and I are out there. You had that old beat up Dodge, and I had that 2005 Sierra. What happened to your old Dodge?
So I bought that Dodge in 2005, and I got it when it was new. And the only reason I bought it new was because I don't remember what there was something going on in that time frame where like cars weren't selling, and so it was like a $35,000 truck that I got for $22,000.
Nice.
And I drove that thing for 16 years. I put 190,000 miles on it.
So that white pickup that I had was a 2005 as well, but I bought it in 2007. So it was 2 years old. I bought it with right at 40,000 miles on it, got a smoking deal on it. And Caleb is still driving that truck.
Yeah.
So when I got ready when he got ready to get his driver's license a few years ago, Katie and I were kind of looking at our 3, 5, 10 year plan, and we wanted to get the fifth wheel. So I started shopping for a big truck, and I passed that one down to Caleb, and we just put all four new tires on that thing, and it still runs great, and it's been paid off for freaking 15 years and love it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, with cars, it's pretty simple, man. If you do the standard maintenance on them, for the most part, they'll typically run forever. You know, with just minor things here and there.
Well, same thing with houses. You know, we talked about this in an earlier episode about doing the routine maintenance and keeping up on things. You can make your assets and your purchases, you can make them last a long time if you just take care of them.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think, though, going back to what we were talking about earlier, though, like there's that influence in our society, though, that you have to have the next best thing, right? I've got to have the iPhone 15. I have to have, you know, the next iPad. I have to have the newest car, you know, whatever it is. I need to buy a Tesla, whatever it is, right? Save the earth, all that stuff. And so just don't fall into those traps, you guys, because I drove the same truck for 16 years. It was the best truck I ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And it didn't cost me a cent, you know, other than gas and what I paid for it initially and insurance and the little bit of maintenance that I had to do. And, you know, you just got to let go of some of those, I think, societal influence about what you should be doing or how you should be looking, or like none of that matters, man. Do what's right for you so that you can get yourself ahead. Because at the end of the day, you know, the dude next to you may be buying a BMW, but when you're 65 and you've got $5 million in the bank and you're retiring and you've got the easy life from here on out and your house is paid off and you don't have any worries financially at all for the rest of your life, that dude probably is not in the same place you are.
Yeah, who's winning at that point?
Unless he's just making a boatload of money more than you are. So
yeah, I was coaching this kid back in the summer, and he's like, I think he was 20 or 21 years old, and life just wasn't panning out the way that he thought it was after high school. And he's a bit of a dreamer. And I was trying to get him to turn a corner of, it's okay to have dreams, but you have to take those dreams and you have to turn them into goals. And then you have to come up with plans to meet those goals. And in our very first meeting, we're sitting at the Chili's eating a salad and we're talking, and I'm going through just taking a bunch of notes and I'm letting him do most of the talking. And he starts talking about his car and how much pain in the ass his car is causing him. And he's like a $600 payment and it's in the shop, so he can't even drive it and blah, blah, blah. And I looked at him, I was like, dude, sell the car.
Yeah,
if it's that much of a friction point,
what do you have a $600 payment for?
Sell the fucking car. Go get you a Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
He's driving like a Dodge Charger or Challenger or something like that, paying $600-$700 a month for it. And he's working part time you know, making, I don't know, 15, 20 bucks an hour. Like, dude, you got no business paying $700 a month. If that is causing you that much pain in your life, then fucking get rid of it, dude.
In fuel, it's just stupid, man. Like,
oh, yeah, that car's got a big ass V8 engine in it. And
when you can go buy a car for $1,500, it'll get you where you need. You can go buy the $100 car like you have, that'll get you where you need to go. You may not look awesome in it, but who the fuck cares? And guess what? The insurance probably isn't outrageous for it either. So,
dude,
right? Like, there's so many different ways that you can save money if you just let go of your ego a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
so Colin,
drive the car when you can afford it.
Colin comes to live with us a couple years ago, and it's a long story, but we needed to get him a car. And so I tell him I'm going to help him. And I said, all right, your homework assignment is I want you to go and just go on Craigslist or Car Gurus or whatever and pick 10 cars that you think are, you know, reasonable in your budget that you would like to drive. Right. So a couple of days go by and I go into his room. I said, all right, man, show me what you got. And I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. There was like two Mustangs, Corvette convertible, you know, I mean, like all these a BMW, like all these fancy stuff. I was like, okay, so we need to talk about expectations here. And what he ended up with was a good friend of mine was upgrading his family car and getting rid of his Honda CRV little. I mean, it's a little small SUV with a four banger engine in it. And, you know, I went and took a look at it. He gave me a good deal on it. So I bought it. I bought it for Colin. I made Colin a deal on it based on him going into the Air Force and whatnot. So we worked out, we negotiated some, and I'll be damned, dude. I just put new tires on that car a couple weeks ago, and I drove that son of a bitch to Texas and dropped it off to him, and he just drove it all the way to Fort Walton Beach, Florida.
There you go.
My point is, you don't need a flashy Mustang or drop-top Corvette when the Honda CRV that's paid off, you have no payment, your insurance is cheap as fuck, right?
That's right.
And I just drove it across the United States getting 28 miles of the gallon in the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and dude, you don't need a BMW or an Audi because the maintenance alone on those cars are outrageous, right?
So this is a guy who drives an cheap, Audi. Right?
I know that now. So buy something that's, you know, get something that you can afford, right? Just the point is live within your means.
Yes, 100%.
And I drive an Audi now because I can afford to drive an Audi now.
Well,
I love Audis.
You know what? That's valid. I got a Ram 2500 because I can afford a Ram 2500.
Here's a perfect example. My wife drives a 2014 Toyota Venza because she has horses and her car gets trashed. And so we could go out tomorrow and buy her something very nice that she would really probably enjoy, like a BMW X5 that she really likes. But why would we do that when it's just going to get trashed? Because if we're going back and forth to the barn all the time and all the stuff she's got to carry and the dirt and the grime and all the stuff that goes along with horses, right? So that 2014 Toyota Venza has been an awesome car. It's got 106,000 miles on it. It's basic maintenance. It's cheap. And she's going to drive it until it probably dies because there's no reason to shift that right now.
Well, I mean, all you're talking about, though, is even things that we've already talked about on the B1 Change One podcast is let go of your ego a little bit, you know, have a little self-discipline about yourself and the balance that you find in your life. And let's go all the way back to the values episode. And when I was talking about defining my values, and one of them was freedom, well, under that is financial freedom. And in order for me to reach financial freedom, I've had to make some sacrifices, like driving the piece of shit S10 in Alaska with no heater and driving the $100 car out here in my driveway right now. And, you know, little things like that. Now, because I've been disciplined enough to do those things and go without the brand new set of AirPods when I can get a set of earbuds from Walmart in the checkout line for about $10 or $15, you know, because I'm willing to go without and have a little delayed gratification on some of these things, some of these material objects in the four-letter F words episode, we talked about being fake. Like, if you can just delay that gratification for a little while and set yourself up nice in your 20s, man, your 30s and 40s are going to be epic if you just build the discipline early.
Absolutely. And I think the thing too is, going back to what we've talked about in the B1 Change One podcast too, is it's not about what anybody else thinks. Like, who cares what people think about the car you drive? Who cares what people think about any of that stuff? It's about you figuring out where you want to go and how you're going to get there. Like, we've talked about this before, right? 10 years from now, you're going to arrive.
I was just going to say,
are you going to arrive there $30,000 in debt?
Oh, you
froze up.
Arrive
there with $150,000.
Oh
grand
no, he froze up. Everything went dark. 10 years from now, you're going to arrive. The question is where.
Yeah, the question is where, right? And that question is, are you going to be $30,000 in debt or have $150,000 in savings and investments, right? Like,
yeah.
That's and so who cares? Who don't worry about what other people think, right? If you have a game plan and you've got a budget and you've got your sight set on something, move out, move towards it, and don't get in the arena, and don't worry about the fucking peanut gallery.
It's okay
don't
to
worry
buy
about
your
all
shirts
the, all
at Walmart.
The naysayers in the stands, man.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It's okay to buy your clothes at Walmart. I mean, I still have shirts hanging in my closet right now that I wear every week to work that I bought at Walmart for $15. Like, and nobody knows any different. It's because honestly, probably nobody cares.
You're gonna throw that shirt away in 2 years, just like you would if you spent $70 on it.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter.
My dumbass dog is on the back porch barking his cranium off right now. Katie had to lock him into my bedroom earlier today. The fridge repair guy was coming out, and that dog will not stop barking. So apologies, listeners, if you're hearing my dumbass dog out there. He literally barks at the dark.
I can't hear it at all.
Well,
so you're probably good.
Now,
the only other thing I would say is just, hey, if you guys are getting into investing, just don't like individual stocks. And like, if you think you can play the market, you can't, you know, like ETFs, just go with the baseline ETF and put your money in ETF. It's going to be diversified. You don't have to worry about it. Throw it in there. You know, long-term, you're probably going to make 8 to 10% over time. That's ETFs are the way to go.
Yeah, you kind of hit it there where, you know, if you're playing the stock market, you got to realize it's kind of the long game. You're playing the 30, 40 year plan here, not the, you know, get rich quick. I'm going to flip a stock and stuff like that. People lose their ass every day trying to flip penny stocks and stuff.
Yeah, don't play those games. You're not a hedge fund manager. Just, you know, if you want to do something and you want to invest long term, you can start a Roth or a traditional. We could talk about that as well, but you could start an IRA, you know, a Roth, backdoor Roth, individual backdoor Roth, or if your company has an IRA, start investing in that. TSP for the military guys, start putting money into that, whatever you can afford to do.
Yeah.
Start doing that and then just put it in ETFs. Low cost, low fund ETFs is the way to invest.
Yeah, the dudes who have the opportunity to do 401ks with their employers who do a company match, that's free money. So take advantage of that.
Yep.
Like, max that stuff out and get that free money. And, you know, there's a million and one ways to do it. You could invest in individual stocks. I know a lot of guys that got into Apple and Google back in the day. And, you know, maybe I had an opportunity here or there to do it, but I just didn't have the surplus income to be able, I wasn't comfortable doing that, right? So
that's the key, is you have to have the surplus income, because there's a lot of risk involved anytime you start doing individual stocks. So
there is, and you know, risk is one of those floating things that I think, like for me, I like to sit down with Katie's dad and talk to him, because he's a generation up for me. He's getting ready to retire and he's done pretty well for himself. But I like to talk to him about, when did you make the transition from high risk mentality to moderate to low risk? Because I'm kind of starting to, you know, I'm getting close. I'm not there yet. I've still got plenty of time. If something bad were to happen, I've got plenty of time to make some of that back. But there's going to come a time in the next few years where I'm going to have to dial down my risk and where I'm willing to put mine. And I'll be honest with you, man, I'm not an active stock market kind of dude. I just don't put that much energy into it. It's not a hobby of mine. Some people like it. Some people like to go in there and watch the tickers every day. That's just not my thing. I like to throw my shit in a mutual fund and just walk away. And, you know, the S&P 500, Warren Buffett, one of the richest people on the planet, he says, if you want to make money, put your money in the S&P 500 and wait. And that's kind of what I've been doing. You know, you're going to average somewhere between 8 and 10% over time, and you're going to be okay.
Yeah, that's the important thing to realize too, especially when we start talking about saving for retirement, is it's a long game. So one, the earlier you get into it, the better off you're going to be, because of compounding interest. And two, yeah, you don't have to worry about, you know, if you're 20 years old and you're already investing, you don't have to worry about fluctuations in the stock market right now or inflation or any of that bullshit, because it's going to go up and down a million times before you get to where you have to be starting to be concerned about it. So, but yeah, ETFs are a good place to put money if you're at the place. I wouldn't play individual stocks unless you're at a place financially where whatever you're willing to invest, you're also willing to lose.
That's right. It's like playing blackjack, man.
Yep.
Yep.
Can be.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm a little stingy with where I spend and what I invest into. And I think it just goes back to the habits. You know, I grew up on a farm. I didn't have a lot of money. And then I joined the military as an enlisted guy. I didn't have a lot of money. And I just built habits to where I like to know where every cent, I've worked hard for every penny I've ever made, and I like to know where that money goes. And, you know, like Tyler with his envelope method, when you have to hand somebody a $20 bill, it stings a little bit sometimes. And I'm the kind of guy that'll stand there in the Piggly Wiggly and compare ketchups and end up buying the house brand because it's 30 cents cheaper. Because I know that 30 cents, if I do that enough times, that's going to equal $30. And $30 may be the difference between me going on a road trip or staying at home. You know, it's little things like that. Yeah. And it's all just mindset stuff, man. So going back to what I was talking about, it's the mindset behind how you spend and what you spend on. And being actively, you know, proactive and active with the way that you manage your money, the budgeting, the day-to-day spending, who you give your money to and who you, you know, when do you need to take a knee or, you know, maybe I don't need to go out to eat this weekend. Maybe we just stay in and freaking, you know, I don't know, microwave a pizza and watch a movie or something because it's cheap.
Yeah, go get a $10 pizza at Costco and put it in the oven.
That's right. Those big ass pizzas from Walmart, man, those things are the bomb diggity because they'll fill you up and they're cheap.
Yeah, and then the only other thing that I would just say, just real quick, not to get too nerdy or into too much nitty gritty, but if you are starting to build a budget, here's a couple of percentages I think that we can throw at people just as a framework to start from. So 25% for housing costs, rent, mortgage shouldn't be over this amount. And that's your net amount. Whatever you're bringing in net a month, it should not exceed 25%.
Yeah.
Food probably in that 10 to 12% range. If you have children, childcare about 12%, you know, your insurance, auto, renters, homeowners, those types of, well, homeowners probably roll into your mortgage, but
yeah.
Auto renters, 4% of your budget, entertainment, maybe 5 to 6%. You know, if you want to set money aside for clothing, 5%, utilities should be under 10%.
Yeah.
Medical, if you want to set money aside for prescriptions that you have to fill or co-pays that you have, you know, or whatever the case may be, 5% for medical and 7% for transportation. That 7% for transportation is not a car payment. That's, I'm assuming you do not have a car payment when
gas and maintenance, like, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Gas, yeah, maintenance, getting your oil changed, getting tires put on the car when you need to, having the brakes replaced. It's a fund that you set aside so that you can build money over time. So when those expenses come up, you have cash to pay for
it.
So that's one place to start. And like I said, get $1,000 into an emergency fund. And then once you get all the debt paid off, then what you really want to do is you want to set aside, I use 3 months. I a lot of people say 3 to 6. I think 6 is a little aggressive. I use 3 months.
Yeah.
We have, you know, three months of our net set aside. They say to keep it in a savings account, you know, so that it's liquid and you can have fast access to it. You know, that's fine. You can also, you know, you can talk to whoever you bank with, and if they have a higher interest loan savings account or a money market account, that may be a place to put it, you know, so that it at least makes a little more money. Or you could also put it into short-term CDs as long as they're paying close to about 5% annual rate. But you only want to do that if it's paying interest monthly. So those CDs are maturing rapidly.
Yeah.
And it has no withdrawal fees. And, they're set aside from losing any interest that you make on that month-to-month basis. So that can be a good option as well. Otherwise, you want to try to save up about 3 months after you get the debt paid off so that you've got an emergency fund built. So if somebody loses a job or you go out on medical or whatever the case may be, you know, you missed work for a while, you have ways to cover your expenses. Yeah.
Well, I don't know when's the last time you bought tires for anything, but holy crap, I got into the wrong business. Tires are fucking expensive now, man.
Oh my God. Like,
it's ridiculous.
Dude, I don't even want to tell you what I spend for my Audi.
Well, I mean, you're probably buying high performance stuff. And I mean, for my truck, I'm buying 35 inch tires at, you know, the highest load rating I can get so I can tow my camper and stuff. And that, holy shit, man, that makes expensive. A dent, you know? And, but you know, when you break it all down though, kind of summarizing a little bit of what we talked about, it's really no different than, you know, keeping your mind, body, soul in balance and defining your values and all the things that we've talked about on all the episodes up to this point, where we're really talking about mindset and what kind of effort are you going to put in to keeping these things in balance. And your finances are right up there with the rest of this stuff, where if you just give it a little bit of effort, and you have to be honest, you know, you have to be, you can't sugarcoat it, because I'm telling you, man, if you just do the math, the numbers won't lie to you and it'll give you the answer at the end. When you hit enter on that Excel spreadsheet and it spits out a number to you, dude, that's the answer, man. And you can sit there and you can hem and haul and bullshit your way through it, but the number is the number, you know? Yeah.
And if that number is way above what you're bringing in every month,
I really don't have a soda problem. Well, if you look at your bank account and you're buying two sodas a day, every day, that's 60 sodas for the month. That's $108 or $120 ish. Yeah. That's a lot of fucking money, man.
Yeah. Or if you're spending $10 at Starbucks every day, that's $300 a month, right? So
yeah,
there's probably ways for you to make it work in your budget, but you have to be disciplined. And here's the other thing too, right? Is if you're over, embrace the suck, dude. Guess what? This is a result of the decisions that you've made up to this point in your life. Take some fucking responsibility for it. Have a little bit of accountability. Have a little bit of fucking discipline and get yourself out of it.
Yep. Tell your friends, if you guys want to hang out, we're sitting on the front porch because I'm not doing anything this weekend. I'm going to save some money.
So. And here's the bottom line is if you don't, and you don't change those habits and you don't build some discipline around it, that debt is just going to grow. And then it's going to become even more and more surmountable as you get older. And if you think that you're just going to make more money down the road and that's going to fix it all for you, it won't.
No, because your problems will magnify.
People that make more money, people just spend more money.
That's right.
And so you have to build the discipline, the financial discipline up front, if you want to ever overcome these things.
If you're a young person and you've been listening to us blab now for 62 minutes, take this away. All right. If I had to leave you with something, it would be start now. It's never too late to start, but start now building the habit of being financially disciplined. And that includes budgeting, that includes savings, that includes all the things that we talked about. But if you start building that habit now, and we've talked about habits a little bit, where you don't have to go jump into the deep end right now. You can start small. Maybe just cut out one of the sodas a day, or, you know, consider lowering your insurance or whatever, you know, wherever you can find to trim the fat. Do a 90-day look back budget and find where the fat is and start trimming it just a little bit, but build that habit now. And then when you're our age, you'll be sitting good. What you don't want to be is you don't want to be that 65, 70 year old dude who has to work because he wasn't disciplined in his 20s and 30s. And now he's in his 60s and 70s and he has to work until the day he dies, because he didn't build these habits. So start now, build the habits, be financially disciplined.
Yeah, that's it.
What else you got, man? Parting shots?
Yeah, the only thing that I would add is just if you guys have questions on budgeting stuff, like I said at the beginning, send it to us, man. We can do another episode and dive down a little deeper into some of these topics if people are interested. And then I just want to remind all the listeners out there that the 19th of December, I think, is the last Tuesday. I think that's a Tuesday. That's the last Tuesday that we'll be putting a podcast out this month, because we're going to take a little break for the holidays. And then we'll catch up with you guys back starting in January.
Yeah, we got some good stuff lined up, I think, for the new year. 2024 is going to be a good year for the Be One Change One podcast. So you guys stay tuned. Yeah, thanks for your support. Be the one.
Be the change.